Okay, here we go. Another show coming up. The Suspendables. So much stuff to talk about, and Rusty did not disappoint. The Super Bowl was this weekend. What did you take away from it? What did you take away from it, Russ? He talks about the halftime show, and he talks about Jerome is like Jennifer Lopez. It's mean, it's hurtful, and it's on the show today. You're going to hear about it. I'm upset. The rivalry. Oh, my God. Calgary-Edmonton. What a good week it was for hockey. All kinds of fights. Freaking goalies were going at it. Everything. Russ weighs in on that. Do players really hate each other? I'll tell you what. Russ said if he ran into a guy that he used to play against today, he would kick the shit out of him. And he gives us a name. He's a little testy about that. Trainers on sports teams. What do they get paid? There's always a big bonus for them at the end of the year. We talk about that. Holdouts. I hate them. What does Russ say? And how do you cure a hangover? Who else would know better than Russ Cortinel? And the other one, finally, tickets. How many tickets are players allowed to get for each game? And, they have to pay? What are free? I can tell you this. Russ is cheap. All that and much, much more coming up on The Suspendables. Are you ready, Rusty? Hey, are you? Are you ready?
Born
ready.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah, there we go. That's our new little intro. Are you ready, Rusty? Here we go for another week of The Suspendables. Hi, everyone. It's Jungle Jim coming to you from Edmonton. Rusty's in L.A. And we've got another show this week. Oh, there it is. If you're new to the show, that's Russ snapping. Wouldn't be your first White Claw. This is way too late in the day at 4 in the afternoon. No,
absolutely my first.
Great week, Rusty. The Super Bowl. First, tell me about your week. I like to catch up first.
Was all right. Had a good week. Nothing too crazy. Played a little bit of golf. Not much. I was working on your tip you gave me, the chipping.
And?
It was good. And? Yeah, really good,
bad. Yeah. Yeah, get the hands good. Ahead, keep the forearm moving forward.
Saw Gretz.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
He's getting ready for...
Told him we made that book, The Loopers, by John Dunn. Remember I sent that to you?
Yeah, I read that your name was in there. Yeah. Do you know the guy at all, or did someone just send you...
I unfortunately don't remember him. I'd have to... somebody would have to give me a little more context. I just read that page, and...
I'll tell you what, you're like me, okay? And... my father wrote a book when he was the Speaker of the House, and he wrote it about being Speaker and all that, because no one knew the role. And naturally, Russ, because you sent me a picture of the page in that book, about 130 was the page number, with your name in there, mm-hmm. okay, where the guy talked. And naturally, Russ, I would just assume you read the book, but you're like me. You just went to find where your name is, right?
To tell you the absolute truth, another caddy at Sherwood came up to me and said, have you seen this book? And I said, no. And he goes, look it. And he had taken a picture of it to show Jimmy, for anybody who's listening, has been listening. Wayne Gretzky's had the same caddy since he's joined Sherwood Country Club, Jimmy Melton. He's just a freaking stud. And he,
oh, yeah.
And he wanted to show Jimmy that he made a book and not a booking. He was in a book. And so I told Gretz, or I saw them flying around the golf course on Saturday. So I was outside, and I'm on the 13th hole. So they came by and I said, hey, Gretz, we made a book. But he goes, did the guy treat us right? And I go, yeah. And I go, Jimmy, you were in it too. And he goes, Gretz goes, uh-oh.
Oh, no. Yeah, there's some... I know Jimmy.
Yeah, we all know... Anybody who's played golf at Sherwood knows Jimmy.
Jimmy's probably the longest-standing caddy there now, I would think. Mm-hmm. And because he's not a young guy anymore. He's probably into his 60s, I would think, and or getting up there. And you can see where someone would... If you hung around at Sherwood, the country club, Bushwood, you know, as they like to call it, that a guy would say, I got to write a book.
Oh.
One of my favorite stories there was one of the caddies who was in our group one day, including Jimmy. There was another guy there, and we're talking about celebrities, you know, who they've seen. Of course, I'm like a kid in a candy store. It's like, who have you seen? You know, who have you seen? Right, and they're whipping off Joe Pesci and a bunch of other guys. You know, one name after another. Of course, right? It's the who's who comes through there, or either joins there.
Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, all sorts, right?
And OJ.
Well, they had just mentioned Sean Connery.
Sean Connery.
And I said, "Oh yeah, what's he like?" And the Jimmy starts to laugh his head off, points to the other caddy, Marvin or whatever his name, he goes, "Why don't you ask him?" Right?
Oh,
and I'm going,
no.
"Oh, do tell. What's up?" He goes, "You know what? If I saw that prick again, I tell you what, I'd kick him in the bag. He's the worst." I was going, "Why? What's the story?" And of course, the way caddying works is you pay cash. You should anyway, but some guys don't. And they say, put it on my bill, you know, so the caddy gets it. They call it chitting the caddy, you know, it's like a chit. And that's brutal because the club has a going rate and it's way cheaper than what normally guys would pay cash. And so he never got tipped by Sean Connery. And he caddied for him the first time. Sean liked him. And then he was pissed, you know, he was pissed. So he caddied for him again. And the caddy ended up getting suspended. Because after the round, same thing happened. Sean walked away without paying the guy. And he ended up getting, you know, fucking $38 or something back in the day when it should have been 100. And he found Sean in the parking lot, the caddy.
No.
Yes. And he, in fact, got the $38 cash, went out to the parking lot and threw it at Sean Connery and said, you know what? It cost me more to go to one of your fucking stupid movies.
Oh,
and threw the money at him.
Oh, I got to ask Jimmy about that one.
It's a true story.
Yeah.
It's a true story. So anyway, I love that shit. So someone should, you know, you could write a book around there. Okay, Super Bowl week. First of all, Russ, you spent a week in L.A. where the outpouring for Kobe was just...
Oh, my God. That's what I did all week is I freaking cried.
Oh, through the roof.
Oh, my God. It's horrible. It's only 8 days ago now. And every time I turn on the TV, they're doing a tribute and they're talking about Kobe. And anyways, I then Shaq got on there and wow. I mean, it just was one tribute after another, and deservedly so. The guy's just an amazing human being, and yeah. So it was a tough week.
Yeah,
that was for sure. LA's mourning big time.
Yeah, it was. I've seen memorials done before when people died tragically. I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen the size of it. I've never.
Princess Di comes to mind. When she died.
Yes, right. That's how big this is.
That's how big it is. It's almost the same feeling, but closer to home. And that's what I was doing, what you're talking about, is kind of comparing, you know, what this is like. And the closest thing I've seen is Princess Di. Not even when JFK Jr.
Right.
When he died in the plane crash with his wife, it was nothing close to this.
I know. Amazing. And I even saw what stood out for me, two things. The memorial they have down at
Staples.
It's not called the Staples Center. I mean, it went for blocks.
Yeah.
It went for blocks with what people left there. And the other one is I was flipping through the dial. I'm all about the sports on the weekend. And there was some, I don't know if it was in Europe or some soccer game even, somewhere that they stopped to honor Kobe Bryant.
Mm-hmm. Worldwide, they said in China, the same thing.
Tough week for you guys to go through, and then people get to escape from all that with the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So
don't try and buy chicken wings on Sunday in the United States, by the way.
Oh, you tried to do that, to order some wings?
Oh, like four or five stores. And
you couldn't get them?
Five. So I don't know if this number's correct, but I think I heard 5 billion wings are eaten during the Super Bowl.
No way.
It's the second busiest grocery shopping day in the United States.
Not only that, I would never think that.
Right? No,
I would think Christmas or Thanksgiving or something.
Yeah.
You know Randy Morton. We know him. He runs the Bellagio Hotel. He's with MGM Properties. And he told me, hands down, hands down, the biggest weekend in Vegas is Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. You know what week that is too? It was Chinese New Year's.
Oh, there you go.
And so it's combination. And I remember Randy, his good friend, and Gretz was wanting to go to the Bellagio one year. I don't know what year it was. And he said, Gretz goes, God, I can't get into the Bellagio. And I'm like, wow. So I was there after, and I saw Randy, and I go, hey, I was talking to Gretz. You couldn't get him a room at the Bellagio?
Of all guys.
Yeah. Your friend, they're close friends. And he goes, Russ, that's Chinese New Year's week. And you have to, where Gretz normally stays, during that week, this was probably 10 years ago, so I don't know what it is today, but all the Chinese come over to celebrate at Vegas, and you have to have a $4 to $5 million line of credit to gamble for that week to have one of those rooms. So I said to Gretz, I go, I found out why you couldn't get a room. And he goes, oh my God, I wish Randy had just told me that. He goes, I was thinking, yeah, what? Anyway, so Randy told me that week makes or breaks Vegas.
No so, kidding, huh?
Yeah, that's how they base their so I was wondering with all that's going on with this.
Coronavirus.
Yeah, wonder how that's affecting travel to Las Vegas.
Yeah, so Super Bowl's big. March Madness is huge. I remember speaking to Randy telling me that those bouts are big, you know, when there's a big boxing bout on. MMA now, of course, packs them in. But the moral of the story here is if you don't think gambling drives all sports, well, then you got another thing coming.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's what makes the NFL go round and round when you... You know, all you got to do is hear those stories you talk about. And then, of course, with the Chinese, this just in, the Asians don't mind gambling, Russ.
Yeah.
They don't mind gambling a little bit. And they're pretty good at math, you know? They're pretty good.
Yeah.
So
read the outlier. Read the book, The Outliers, and you'll find out why they're good at math.
Oh, Outliers. There we go. Yeah. I'll write that down. What'd you think, Russ, of the whole thing? Our big Super Bowl parties there? Halftime show. What'd you think?
I thought it was okay. I thought J-Lo was a bit much, you know.
What do you mean?
Well, she's touching herself. You know, there are kids watching across the country, and she's, you know, touching herself. I don't know. To me, that's a bit much. But
I don't know about that.
Well, you'd like it. You'd like it. You're touching yourself all by yourself at home.
Stop.
Pretending you're J-Lo.
Stop it. Stop it.
But, hey, did you hear about Mahomes at dinner before the Super Bowl with his girlfriend, what he did?
No, what did he do? Let me hear.
So he takes his girlfriend out for dinner, and not one person in the restaurant came up and said anything to him.
After the game you're talking about?
No, before the Super Bowl. So he and his girlfriend go out for dinner, have this great dinner apparently, and nobody came up and said anything. Nobody obviously asked for his autograph. So as he's leaving the restaurant, he turned and said, I just want to thank everybody for letting us have a great dinner tonight and giving us our privacy, and walked out. And then every waiter and waitress came to each table and said, he just bought you guys dinner tonight.
Oh, no way.
How cool is that?
Wow.
I love that story.
What a move.
I know. What a great move. Classy. 24 years old.
So he just keeps on getting better. Yeah, hits just keep on coming with this guy. What next, you know?
Yeah, So I heard that story. I thought it was great. My wife was in tears telling me the story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thought it was so nice.
It always reminded me. Mess used to do that. We'd go for a beer in town. We'd stay 5 minutes, you know? If he didn't like the scene, right, he's like, okay, let's get out of here. Let's go somewhere else, right? Back in the days when everyone went to the bars.
Uh-huh.
And then he'd say, give me the bill, right? And it'd be like $700. Would you? We had one beer.
Yeah.
I said, the guy's stiffing you. He goes, no, I got everyone a beer. Rusty, one of the things is these... I was watching a bunch of tennis the last couple of weeks, and one of the things tennis has done is put the women on an equal footing with the men in terms of prize money.
Yeah.
They're the first sport to do it. The winner, each men and women, take a shot, Russ, at what they make.
$1.2 million?
$1.2 million. That's close. That's close. Try $4.2 million.
Wow, each. Good for them.
$4.2 million. It's the prize money's, I don't know, $170 million or something. You know, it's crazy the big payouts.
Wow, good for them.
Yeah, so that would stagger me when I saw it, and I suspect it'll be at all four majors. It'll probably be that high. So, so when you played, Russ, what was the bonus dough like when you made the playoffs and ran as far as you could in the playoffs? What was it back then?
Well, each round, you know, you knew once you got into the first round you were going to make X because the loser gets so much and the winner mm-hmm. gets more, obviously. And then they automatically know they're going to get at least the losing money in the second round. So you're always, you know,
one step ahead.
Yeah. But when I played, and we lost the cup in 88-89. So we lost to Calgary. And I think they got 30. Oh, sorry. That was my phone.
It's your banker.
I think they... actually, that's my buddy owes me $1,000, so I'm glad he's calling me. yeah, so the winner was, you know, let's say $35,000 per player or something, and then $17,000, $18,000 for second, which we lost. So we got the losing money, but it wasn't big dough like it is today. They get, I think now... They get a set amount that they have to divide, the players, and so they pay the trainers out of that and the mm-hmm. players. So, I, because I'm not getting any of it, I really don't know what it is. But yeah, I never was part of any crazy bonuses or anything.
So. I in the other day when I was running around, you know, taking uh-huh. rebounds from everybody yeah. when they were winning cups, I'm a fanatic golfer, as you know, and Grant Fear is a fantastic golfer. And, when he was here, we played golf the week of the Stanley Cup final after they won. He stayed around town for a while, and he showed up at the tee and said, "Sorry, I'm late," and flashed this check, this bonus check that he got. I think Fierzy was always, you know, let's get the yeah. money and let's get it now, you know, that yeah. sort yeah. of thing. And he flashed his check for $25,000.
Wow.
Was the bonus, all the bonus dough for winning the Stanley Cup back then. So what'd you ever do? Were there any good stories, Russ, what guys did with their bonus money?
I know that when I was in Montreal and we were in the finals, all the young guys, we were looking at Porsches.
Oh, yeah.
We were all going to buy a Porsche. So we didn't get a Porsche because we lost. But we were all in there looking at, we were going to get these Porsche cars. And yeah, so... The guys in Calgary probably bought them, but
yeah.
No, the nicest thing I got was my 1,000th game. I got a gold watch from my players and the players I played with, my teammates, I should say, and still have it. And a couple of the other guys got watches too, and two guys got Sea-Doos, which they don't have anymore. But I've talked about that on the show. But I, you know. I just never got the huge bonus check. So I think a lot of us, when I played in the 80s, 90s, it was always about winning the Stanley Cup and not about the money, because the money just wasn't that big. It's not that it wasn't important. It was just, it's not like what you're talking about, millions of dollars. Like yesterday on the waste management, what would that guy have won?
Finau and Webb wins in a playoff.
So what was the difference? I mean, that's a guy that'll be on a podcast in 20 years going, I could have won X and I didn't make that putt and I got right. this much. I mean, those are the kind of guys that are going to reminisce about the what ifs or what they got.
Yeah, I don't know. It's probably, it's over $1 million now they get to win.
Yeah.
Which sounds
so you probably got $700,000 for second or...
Oh, something like that.
You know, so it was a big deal. It was at least a $500,000 screw up, if you want to call it that.
Oh, yeah. Totally. And even more heartbreaking is Finau's established now. He's won once. He hasn't won in a few years, but he's a top 20 guy. And yeah. And Webb Simpson's U.S. Open champ, and he's won a bunch. And what is really heartbreaking, and they bring it during the broadcast all the time, is they got their stats people now working behind the scenes who will say, if this guy doesn't make this putt, okay, if he doesn't make this putt, he loses his exemption.
Oh, God.
Fuck. It's just oh, come on, dude. You know, it's like diapers for these guys, right? These lower-end guys. The PGA takes 125 guys, but they are fighting for their life.
Oh, because yesterday there was a guy, and the broadcaster was saying, well, this is an important putt for him because of what you just said. If he gets this score, then he gets – it means something for FedEx points for this guy. I don't know who the golfer was, but they were – the other announcers were already kind of moved on, like, you know, this doesn't mean anything. And some guy popped out of the nerd book and said, oh, yes, it does.
Yeah, I know. And that's what separates golf from all other sports, these guys are playing for their life.
Yeah.
They're playing for their life. And everyone will say, well, they're so rich. No, it's kind of the 80-20 rule, right? The 20% of the guys are making all the dough. And the rest of the guys are fighting for their life. And you only get money if you make the cut. You know, you don't...
Yeah.
You don't, if you didn't know that, you do not get paid if you miss the cut. And
and then how about the caddies?
And the caddies are in for 5%, roughly. You know, I hear 10. Different stories all the time. So 10 if you win and 5. And anyway, I love golf. And that event is as big as the Super Bowl.
Oh, my gosh. Is that huge? What? I went to it once. I went with some oil guys. I just had a blast. I went when oil was around $100, and my buddy had $250,000 to spend that week or weekend, and we had a box up there and they bought us all green jackets. It was hilarious.
Really?
I was supposed to go for 2 days. I went for 4.
Oh yeah.
Paris sent me a text and said, where are you? And I took a picture from the box. So when you're on the tee box looking at the green, I was in the top left pin high. The best box.
Sure.
Oh, my God. It was the best box.
Of course
it was, right? Oil's at $100. These guys got nothing but dough to spend. So,
no, not because of that, Russ, because you've always been to the best parties, okay? Yeah, it's because of you.
No, it was. I was a guest. It was all about him, not me. I was just tagging along. But anyways, so Paris texts me and it's like, where are you? I took a picture of the 17,000 people cheering. I said, I'm at the tournament. She's like, I thought you were going for a couple days. And I said, yeah, but, you know, she goes, like, you were supposed to be home yesterday. This is now it's a Saturday. And I take the picture. I was on, like, the first flight home Sunday. I was like, and I was in the doghouse.
Yeah. That's 17,000 people, by the way, on one hole.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And most of them are around the green because they stack at 3 high, and then they've got the open air off to the other side, which was brutal because when it's sunny and hot, man, you don't want to be sitting there. You're cooking.
Yeah, and it's a shit show.
Oh, it is an absolute shit show. And in our box, they were all Canadians, and they had invited, you know, people, the companies they did business with and friends, and my younger brother was there. And he got everybody's jacket size. And they like people to wear green, like people get dressed up. You'll see in the audience, people are wearing costumes, and most of the time they're in green costumes. So we're in green jackets, like you won the Masters green jacket. And everybody stopped us, and they're like, now that was good.
Yeah.
So we had Masters green jackets on. It was pretty funny. I think I still have it.
Is booze allowed in those boxes? I mean, we should be talking Super Bowl, but that Phoenix Open was on, and it's just, I loved it. I absolutely love it, and apparently it's like an absolute slobbering contest with how hammered everyone gets. And God bless the players.
Right? Yeah, who encourage it.
They do, and yet not all of them like it after. It's like, okay, it's fun for one tournament, but anyway, I love it. I loved every minute of it, and... you know, it just goes to show you, Russ, you know, it's the same weekend as the Super Bowl, that, you know, in promoting these sports, that a lot of them now are saying, okay, we got to do something outside of the game itself. You know, I mean, the Super Bowl is the obvious, right? Halftime show. Commercials. Commercials are $5 million bucks now.
Yeah, 5.6.
Yeah, huge. And to have J-Lo and
Shakira.
Yeah.
Shakira.
Oh, is that your little impression there? That's good. Rusty, hockey talk. Let's go. We got the NHL, and what busted wide open this week was the rivalry, probably one of the best ones, even in the days when you played Montreal-Toronto. The Calgary-Edmonton rivalry was one of the biggest things ever in sports to come along in the 80s, and it was great back then. It was huge. There was everyone. The games sold out lickety-split. They were the highest prices of tickets from scalpers, I remember, back in the day. And this thing is revved up again, kind of out of nowhere, actually. Cassian and Tkachuk for Calgary, Cassian for Edmonton, sort of went at it a couple times. And now this thing, they had back-to-back games with Calgary, and then another one a few days later. And it's gone through the roof.
Yeah.
It's gone through the roof. And what did you think? It was all about the fighting, Russ.
Well, you know it's alive when you've got non-fighters fighting.
Nugent Hopkins?
Yeah. And the other kid from Calgary.
I think Monahan.
Did they say it was his first fight or second fight in the NHL? And he's played like 7 years or something?
And it was only Nugent's third fight or something.
And it was a hell of a fight. It was a hell of a fight. For two guys who don't fight. And then the goalies. I mean, the goalies got to get in the action, right? That's hilarious. But it's alive and well. And the comments after are just like, you know, the disdain for one another is carrying over. So it's good. It's good to have those rivalries. And this one's alive and well again in Alberta. I remember when in the 80s when you would go out and play Calgary and Edmonton, and if you could get a tie out of two games, you were doing all right.
Right, they were so good.
So good. And then, well, I remember we went out and swept we swept Alberta. I was playing with Dallas, and oh my God, did we party? We had such a good time. We went to Banff after we swept Alberta, and we were there for Super Bowl.
Yeah.
We were there for 3 days, and Bob Gainey thought it'd be a good idea to go to Banff, and we'd just take it easy and, you know, practice a little bit and,
sure,
you know, relax and go to Vancouver instead of going all the way back to Dallas. We outdrank the town of Coors Light. That was our drink at that time. We just kept going from bar to bar to bar.
And right.
They must have been... We must have been there during the week, but we hammered every Coors Light they had in Banff.
You know, hockey players got to be the best drinkers, aren't they, Russ? I've been around baseball teams. They don't tilt, man, as much as the hockey players do.
Rugby's up there.
Yeah, but rugby—that's fucking rugby takes a backseat.
Well, okay, it's a sport.
Rugby. Who gives a shit about rugby? Okay,
well, no, the top four sports, hands down. Hockey players are the best drinkers.
And that's what makes them so
hands
good.
Down.
Really? Yeah, that's what makes them so good. Jim Poplinski was on.
Pepper.
Pepper was on after the broadcast. And Louis DeBrusque and Martin Gélinas. And obviously they were handpicked because of this rivalry that has cranked up again. And when people stood back and said, well, why hasn't it been that way for so long? And why is it so... you know, ripe right now, you know, that it's you know, the Band-Aid is off and the thing exploded. And a bunch of people had different opinions for it. And I think, in my mind, Poplinski had the best one. He said, the reason it stopped happening is because the teams were shitty for a long time.
100%.
And do you think that, too? I mean, you need to be good to have a rivalry.
1,000%. Because the games mean more. I mean, when you're the shits... It's all about draft picks and, you know, guys just trying to stay in the league, stay on a team. When you're good, you're jockeying for a playoff position, not the playoffs, but where you're going to finish so you get an easier route. And the games mean more. But when you're the shits, fuck, guys are just trying to stay in the league and coaches are trying not to get fired and they're not worried about, you know, beating the shit out of each other. They're just trying to stay alive.
Survive. Russ, when you played, you were in the, you know, in Vancouver, for example, that was the Smythe division. Right now, I think Edmonton only plays Calgary four times. Back in your day, Russ, would you play a divisional team eight times?
Yeah, eight times, 4-4. Oh.
You would?
Yeah.
You would. Yeah. That would be great for the rivalry.
Oh, you know? Yeah. I think it's better, though, for the fans to see more of the other teams. I like the format. I think it gets a little old when you're playing so many divisional games. I think it's good for the Hawks. The fans that are paying all that money to watch, they want to see Crosby. They want to see the West, the East, whatever, vice versa. Mm-hmm. I think it's good, and I think four is a good number for. Eight was a bit much. Oh my God.
I loved it.
Oh
well,
yeah.
But the rivalry was alive and well. That's why.
You know. So. I've probably talked about this before, but Dallas and Chicago, when I was there, we had a really good rivalry. And mm-hmm. we had a Saturday night game, I think, we had back-to-back against Chicago.
Right.
We had 5-7 fights at the end of the game in Chicago. We come back the next night, and our frickin' announcer goes, as we're all walking out on the ice, I think I've told this story before. So we've had warm-up. Now we're going out to start the game. And mm-hmm. as we're walking down the tunnel to go out onto the ice, our frickin' announcer goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!" Mike Badano and I looked at each other and we're like, "Are you frickin' kidding me?" Like, all these idiots need anybody to egg them on.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so funny. Then there was another million fights.
That's hilarious. Thanks. I love that. It reminds me, there was an announcer here for the Eskimo Games, Wes Montgomery, a great dinner speaker, mentor of mine. He's passed away a long time ago, but he was a notorious drinker, okay? And he'd been fired from, he was a radio guy. And he's been fired for more jobs than he ever got hired from because he'd be hammered on air, you know. And yeah. He would. He did a morning show, and often he would stay up all night and come in. But he had unbelievable stories. He was a friend of Wilkie's and you know, Dan Kepley and these guys who were household names, you know, in the CFL. And he was also the in-house announcer, the PA guy for the games. And he was obviously hammered, and I wasn't at this game, but I heard it. And there's a pause. There's a commercial break, right? So you see the players standing around in the huddle. You know that they got to wait for the commercial to end. And over the PA, while they're waiting, standing around, this is at Commonwealth Stadium, 70,000 people. And he comes on the mic, and he goes, "Hey, Wilkie," right? "Who's the quarterback?" And everyone looks up. He goes, "Hey, Wilkie. Your babysitter just phoned. She wants to know where the fire extinguisher is." I mean, he was hilarious, man. He was absolutely hilarious. And I've heard, well, Stevie Warren and I, we do a podcast during the day there in Ottawa. And some of the shit that people have said when you hear that announcer do that. I call it Gabby's his nickname, Gary Galley, okay, who's now, you would have played with Gary.
Yeah, I played with him against him and then played with him in L.A. Gaga.
He was doing a show started at the radio station I worked at in Ottawa, and he was taking phone calls.
Yeah.
And the team was going bad or something, and you know fans, they go fucking nuts, and they're saying, "Get rid of this guy and do this and all that." And Galley's kind of new at it, and he's saying, "Well, you know, he didn't want to upset anyone. He knew these guys,
right?
So he's in a tough position. The radio station's the broadcaster for the Sens, so you can't hack on him too much." And Galley says, "Well, you know, we got to give Bonk a chance or something like that." And anyway, he goes, "We'll be right back, you know, and we'll talk more about this." Well, he doesn't shut his mic off.
No.
Yep.
The dreaded mute button.
He forgot about the mute, didn't shut his mic off, and the producer probably stood up to go get a coffee or something, you know, click the commercials, and you can hear in the background, you hear Gabs is going like this, I'll tell you what. You know, he's got a partner there with him doing the show. He goes, they got to get rid of that fucking bonk. He's fucking brutal.
No. Right?
Oh, yeah. Over there. Something like that. It's around somewhere. But anyway, that's funny. Let's get ready to rumble.
Now he's doing Hockey Night in Canada, so it wasn't all that bad.
Yeah. No, he's doing fine. We got questions, Russ. Questions from the crowd.
Oh, boy.
Before we leave this. Anyway, you love the rivalry. It's going to be here to stay.
Yeah,
they only play each
great.
Other once more at the end of the year. I think it's the last game of the year. So, obviously, the fighting thing, Russ, is you would be a proponent of it then, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all talked about fighting. I mean,
yeah.
I just don't like the needless, you know, when the two guys drop their gloves and it's a big show and they haven't played a freaking second of the game. And that to me is little much. But
right.
When you get teams that are battling and they're fighting to get in the playoffs, stay in the playoffs, whatever you want to call it, and they're good teams and they're pissed off at each other and we're all talking about it.
So. And with that, you're going to get unneeded fights. That's just part of it.
Yeah, I've just never been a fan of these guys that come out from the bench, come off the bench, face off. You know, they haven't had to shift. They drop the puck and these guys fight. I mean, God.
Right.
Go to commercial.
I'm going to ask you something, Rusty. Oh, that fucking bonk.
Yeah, did you see my fight? No, they went to commercial.
Yeah. Bufflin in Winnipeg, back to the start of the year, there was this strange story that he didn't show up to training camp. And it was like, why? And everyone was float. There wasn't a real reason. It started,
right.
The rumor mill started floating around personal problems, holding out. And they said, no, it's not that. It's not this. It's not that. The other thing.
Like he's making $8.5 million a year.
Yeah. And then it was right around the time Andrew Luck, the football player, said, I'm not going to play anymore. I've had enough. I want to save myself. And people were just floored. You know, they said, you got to be kidding me. He was walking. And they thought maybe this was this sort of thing too. And then the story just never sort of got anywhere. And now he said, well, I had an ankle injury and I couldn't do it. And the team was saying, well, you never told us that, you know?
Oh.
And so now it looks like they're into a sticky situation about whether he should be paid. What's your take on that, Russ, with guys holding out for money? Bufflin aside here for a second.
It just depends if you've got a partner to dance with. If the team's not dancing, then I get it. You know, guys are holding out because they're not getting, you know, they're not getting what they think they're worth. But if the team and the agent are negotiating and things are looking good, then, you know, usually you don't have that player that holds out because he knows they're close.
Right.
So the holdout is usually always just because they're so far apart. And whether it's the player's fault or the team's fault, somebody's way off, right? And it takes...
I hate it, Russ.
It is what it is. I mean, Mess had to hold out and he ended up in New York because Edmonton wouldn't pay him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you probably hate it for that reason. But if he didn't do it, then he wouldn't have got the money that he deserved, which he deserved.
Maybe I hate it more now because the money's so big.
Yeah, but okay, forget the last part of the equation, what millions, just do numbers. So if a guy's worth six and they're offering four,
yeah,
that's a long ways, 4 to 6, right? So you think, okay, five and a half. But if the guy's stuck on six, four, I mean, it's a you know, the short career, you gotta make it. And you know, these players like in Boston, they'll give in,
mm-hmm.
and because they want to stay there. It's a great city. It's a great team. Blah blah blah. And they're all talking about it. Yeah, you got to take less to play here if you want to play on this team. And it's but they do. And then there's other teams
to be able to pay the stars.
Yeah, and they want to stay. Even the lower tiered guys are taking less.
Yeah. It's so. What I don't like about it is, one of them is why it's always left to the last minute.
Yeah, that I agree with you 100%. The fight should be had months. Why is it you're bang on? It should be dealt with a lot sooner than, oh, training camp, Bobby's not coming.
Yeah.
Like, frickin' do your job. Like, if I was a GM, I'd be hounding that guy, and I wouldn't show it as a weakness. I'd be like, let's get this done. We got to negotiate. We got to and give your best effort. And maybe some of them have, because we all don't know what how many times people talk. But, God, too many times it just goes into the season. And then either player signs for the money that they were offered or they win. You know, it's...
Yeah.
Anyways.
It's kind of like the trade deadline, right? It was always odd to me. It's like, okay, they want to make a trade, but they're going to wait until 5 to 12 on that day, you know. But.
Well, for some teams, too, they don't know till leading up to the deadline whether they're a buyer or seller because they're so close, they're on the bubble. So they're waiting to the last minute. But how about, I was just looking at the stats of Arizona after they've made that trade. I mean, it has not gone well. Talk about the team who made the deal quickly and early, Hall.
Yeah.
I mean, they went from first to a wild card.
Yeah, they're like 2-7 or something. I don't know, their last 10. I was looking this morning.
That doesn't bode well for his contract next year, wherever he ends up.
Yeah. And of course, I love Rick Tocchet.
Oh, we all love Dickie.
Yep.
Dickie's the best.
Okay, here we go, Rusty. One of our segments that just sort of propped out of nowhere, and now we use it all the time, are questions for Russ. The first one, Russ, I think is the best question that anyone could ask any athlete. So this one's top of the list. What's the cure for the hangover, Russ?
Ha! Avoid the hangover.
Don't you get hungover? I used to get so hungover.
Jesus. Did you? I don't really get.
Yeah,
I don't get headaches or anything. But
I know why you don't get hungover, Russ. There's just not enough time between. Yeah.
Well, if we were on a road trip for 10 days and we went out after the game, hard, and then had a day off the next day, meaning we didn't play, and then a game the day after, and boys were hungover, they at dinner would have a couple, maybe a few beers.
A little leveler. Yeah, you got to have a little leveler.
Yeah, just before curfew, have a few beers at dinner, maybe some wine, and then sweat it out in the morning, get ready for the game.
There you go.
Start all over again.
Yeah, my worst results of being hungover, Russ, and I don't know if Stevie, our producer right now, can find this clip when I was in radio, but I was so fucking hungover doing a radio show one morning that I fell asleep while I was talking.
Oh, my God. That I don't know if you were hungover. You're probably still drunk.
Still drunk or hungover. But I'll try and tell you how it sounded. I'll try and show you how it sounded. It sounded like I was taking a dump. Okay, because so I'm talking to you like this, Russ, right? I'm going, okay, well, that's a great... Oh, I'm back. And the host of the show said, folks, for the first time in my life, you just heard a guy fall asleep. And so that's what... And the worst one I ever did was I fell asleep on an airplane and tipped over at the waist into a guy's dinner on his pull-down tray. I flopped. God. So
what can't believe you went to rehab.
Listen to you. Like, you're probably just holding back. Have a couple. That's what you do. Have a little Bloody Mary, a little eye-opener, a red eye or whatever they call it in the morning. Another question, Rusty, is, you know, Super Bowl is all about the fan experience for sure. You know, the way they build. I don't know how big it's going to get one day, Russ, you know. In 20 years from now, what is that halftime show going to be like in commercials? And but the fans love it, and you see great stuff in sports now where players are endearing themselves to fans, and some of the experiences that these fans have where they get to meet some of these players. One guy wants to know, Russ, what's the weirdest request you've ever had from a fan? Good question. I like that.
Jeez, weirdest.
I sent you this earlier to give you a heads up.
Yeah, that's why I don't read them. Stupid questions like this. This weirdest request.
Any girl ever throw herself at you?
Well, I mean, you know, sign a breast, sign a bum.
Oh.
Kind of thing. Sign my underwear. Wow. That'd probably be the weirdest, you know, most crazy
that's
thing.
Pretty weird. Yeah.
Not weird, but, you know, that's probably about it.
Well, this went flat. Okay, that question's not good. That's fuck all there. Okay,
I don't know.
What about
come over for dinner? That would be weird.
There
can
you go.
Can you come Sunday supper? We're having Sunday supper. Can you come over? No.
Yeah, no. What's the most amount of tickets you've ever had to buy, and what's the deal with players on tickets?
My God.
What are they allowed? Well, how does that work?
You know what my nickname was in L.A., my end of my career? With the ticket guy, because every team has a guy that comes around, go, how many tickets you need? Who's the name? Who do you put them under?
Right.
And mine was COD. COD.
Oh, ah! Oh, players usually would pick up the tab.
Oh, so but he... So that every freaking city, I played 16 years, my last 2 years, everywhere I went, it was like tickets, tickets, tickets. And I would say to guys, okay, I can get them for you, but give me your credit card number. And then.
Well, I could do that.
Yeah. Oh my God. It was hilarious.
COD.
So the guy, hey, COD, how many tickets you want?
Yeah. 20, 30.
But Danny Gare, his nickname was Tickets. He actually has a gold ring that says Tickets because everywhere he went. Can I get your tickets? Can I use your tickets? Because each player on the road gets a couple tickets that you can buy, and a lot of guys don't use them. So he would go around to each player in the team. Can I use your tickets? Can I use your tickets? So they nicknamed him Tickets.
So you don't get free tickets as a player?
No.
No.
No, no. Okay. You only get free ones at home.
Oh, you do? What do you get?
You get two.
You get two free ones at home, most rinks. Okay.
Two free ones at home. There I gave my tickets.
Yeah, there you go. COD.
COD. Hey, COD, what do you want?
what do the trainers normally get tipped at the end of the year? This guy seems to know what he's talking about because that's how it works, isn't it, with the trainers? Or do you tip them per game?
Tip them at Christmas and at the end of the year. And it just, I mean, obviously it's different now. Back when I was, it was a few $100 and then, you know, a few hundred to $1,000 each at the end. Just depend. It depends how far you go in the playoffs.
Big day for the trainers, right?
It's a big day. I mean, it was. I've never seen anything like it when I played with Gretz and Mess. I mean, the guys. Oh boy,
making tons.
They set the bar a little high.
Especially for COD.
COD.
Yeah, that would be a little tough.
You know what? I'm going to ask one of the players that plays today and ask them what they tip. Then I'll have it for the next show.
Yeah,
just because it's changed. I mean, all the players now are making tons of money compared to 20 years ago, right? Where there was just a few.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. Good. It's from fans, Russ. These are fans. All right. They want to know. Well, Rusty, that's a wrap. As I look up here, as we finish the show, and another good show, Russ.
You notice I didn't tease you today because my wife says I've been a little too hard on you. So I took a week off. Next week, get ready.
Listen, pal, fucking bring it on. Okay, don't.
She's worried about you.
You don't fall for any of that.
Drive Jim to drink again.
You should, you know, folks, listen, if you think Russ teases me on air, you should see the shit he texts me, okay? Anyone else would be in the fetal position, you know? Your go-to is always a good one. Hey, Jim, fuck off.
Fuck off.
Anyway, another show in the books, Rusty. That's great stuff. You have a good week. What are you doing for the rest of the week, Russ?
I am going to try and get out on the golf course a little bit. My son's got a couple games next weekend, and my daughter has a soccer game finally, so I get to go watch her, and Allie's home, so just family time.
I got a final thought for you. I want to ask you. I forgot to ask you. You know, when fans watch games, Drysdale's weighed in saying he did disrespect the goalie there, flipped his stick the other day.
Yeah. I saw that.
In the shootout, he poke-checked Drysdale and he flipped his stick and Drysdale's, I don't respect him. I'm not going to go on the ice with him at the All-Star game, shit like that. Do players really, Russ, do they really hate each other sometimes, or is it just a show?
No, there's players that absolutely hate each other for sure.
Oh, there is?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you?
Yeah. There's jealousies that, you know, some player got drafted ahead of another player. One guy made Team Canada, the other guy didn't, or Team USA. One guy got cut, one guy got traded. I mean, there's all kinds. And then, you know, most hockey teams, they're, call it 20 skaters. There's 19, 18 good guys and two, you know, okay guys. So,
right.
Or not. And so there's always going to be somebody that doesn't like somebody else, that they just don't like the way they play. I mean, you know, I remember playing against guys and my brother would say, I can't stand that guy. And I go, why? He goes, because the way he fucking plays. I hate the way he plays.
Oh.
Like, okay. Never met him before, but I hate him.
So they get a little girly, almost, some of the players.
No, I wouldn't say it's girly. It's just the disrespect. They don't respect one another, and so that turns into hatred.
How about you? Did you ever have anyone got under
your... Oh, fuck, there was players I couldn't stand. I always said I would like to come back for, like, 2 months as a fighter like Wendell Clark and beat the shit out of a lot of guys. That,
like who? Come on.
Chris King was a son of a bitch. The guy was... he's head of the... He works for the league now, right? And he was just a mean... He might be the greatest guy on the planet. I've never met Chris King.
Yeah.
But he was one of those guys that would freaking... He was so dirty. And he didn't care who you were. So he was a guy that I just... I wish I was a scrapper. Because he's probably the first guy I would have freaking won. Yeah, he was a dirty, mean player. But like I said, I've never met him before.
There you go. That answers that.
Yeah.
Okay, Rusty, off you go. Okay.
All right.
Off you go. And remember what your wife said. Be fucking nice to Jungle. Okay.
Yeah.
Be nice to... Did I tell you I love your wife? Did I tell you I love Paris?
Yeah.
She's in my corner. Okay. Have a good week.
Okay. See you, pal.
See you later, everybody. Bye-bye.